All right. Welcome to day three of TechEd. My name is Vijay Rajagopalan. I'm a principal program manager in Windows Azure Runtime team. This is a talk focused on infrastructure as a service, deep dive into infrastructure as a service. I hope to cover the following things in this. I'm joined by two of my great partners here from Scale Extreme and RightScale, and they're going to be with me showcasing how they've advanced their cloud story on top of Windows Azure. So quick agenda here. I'll be starting and giving you a quick bird's eye view of how do you get started with IaaS. You've heard from Mark's talk and a few other talks as well. So I wanted to quickly wrap up and say, if you wanted to get started, what are the ways to get started? Then I'll move on to some of the patterns, particularly for ramping up on infrastructure as a service, the API surface of the platform to demonstrate ISVs and enterprise can innovate on top of our platform. Then I'll have Scale Extreme will demonstrate their innovation in terms of how they've built a monitoring and management platform on top of Windows Azure. Then I will switch gears into provisioning side of Windows Azure. What happens when you create a virtual machine? How can you extend this? So I will be focusing mostly on the provisioning story. Then I have a lot of tips and tricks in terms of application patterns. What do you need to watch out for when it comes to SLA management? How do you build applications for high availability? Hey, by the way, you've released platform as a service in terms of cloud services. If I wanted to mix and match cloud services, web, virtual machines, and websites, how do I do that? What works today? What doesn't work? Where does Microsoft plan to go and take it forward? I would like to give you some perspective on that. Finally, I'll have RightScale come up and showcase what they've done, particularly with respect to monitoring, management, auto-scale governance on their solution, building on top of Windows Azure. Finally, we'll all be here to take your questions as well. Before I quickly get started, I would like to know how many of you attended Mark's talk, so I'll know. Mark Rasinovich's virtual machine? Okay, a few. How many of you attended Corey Sanders' talk? Okay, great. So I'm sure you got some perspective in terms of creating a virtual machine. I'll just quickly summarize this. So if you wanted to get started, Microsoft has the great portal where you have stock images that gets patched by Microsoft on a regular basis, on a monthly basis, and publishers, SUSE, OpenLogic, and a few others who will continue to publish their Linux images. So that's a great way to get started immediately. So the tool that you use is Management Portal. The whole publisher images are exposed through REST API as well as through PowerShell, so you can create your VMs using a base image that Microsoft and publishers have produced immediately from all these tools. The other option is, okay, the vanilla image is not interesting for me. I need to customize it. My IT organization requires an application stack in it, security software in it. How do I get started? So you can customize a stock image and create your own playlist. So basically, we have an option in the portal as well as in the API to capture your image. I'll showcase it in the demo shortly. That allows you to baseline images for your IT organization. So if you are a Windows customer or a Linux customer, your organization requires a specific set of softwares from a compliance angle. You will install all of them, all the necessary software, and capture it and create it as part of your gallery. So from then onwards, you will be using that image for provisioning your virtual machine. So that's the second option. The third option is we also support migration of virtual machines from on-premise. So we have a bunch of tools which I will be showcasing shortly that will allow you to bring your own VM. If you have a heavy virtualization infrastructure on-premise, you can bring your own VM seamlessly onto Windows Azure as well. So the tools I would be using here are obviously Management Portal, Windows Azure SDK, Commandlets, as well as PowerShell. And I will be also introducing our sister team, System Center. That team has done a fantastic work to support migration of virtual machines from private cloud and other clouds onto Windows Azure. So I'll be showcasing that shortly. So this is cloud provisioning. Since many of you have already seen the keynote and Mark's talk, I won't be spending too much of time here. This is basically you go to Management Portal or use a REST API or use our scripting environment. There is a bunch of images available in the cloud. This is what we call as gallery or platform image repository. You'll get to hear a bunch of terminologies being used. These are essentially the stock images that Microsoft and the Microsoft publishers on a constant basis make sure that it's updated and it's made available for you to create virtual machines. So you basically create your VM from one of these stock images. This is the most common imaging solution that we expect our customers to use. The second option I would like to start is essentially, okay, I get it. I would like to now customize this image. How do I get going? So you start from a base image and then boot it. Make all the changes, install necessary software that your organization needs, particularly from a compliance angle, security angle, and then generalize it. You basically remote desktop into this machine, go to command window and sysprep generalize and shut it down. And then when you shut it down, this image becomes available as part of your images gallery. From there onwards, you can create a new virtual machine from your so to speak, a playlist of your own image. So this is a second method that we recommend for large organizations that require customization of the base image. The third one is obviously on-premise. If you have a heavy-duty investment in a virtualized environment, if you have a lot of VMs sitting around that you need to bring it onto Azure for a certain reason, we do support that as well. So there are some caveats here that I will be calling out shortly. So primarily, when you bring it, as you know, the durability or the persistence of Windows Azure VMs are supported by the Windows Azure Storage. You can use your favorite tool, Storage Explorer, your favorite tool to upload your VMs into the Blob Store, and then you can create a new VM out of it. But there are some caveats you need to remember. When we new up a new VM from the stock image, we make sure that the page files are appropriately copied into the right folder, and the Windows activation is set correctly, and most importantly, time sync between the host environment and the guest is also appropriately calculated. So these are some caveats you need to remember when you are bringing your VM using your favorite choice of tool. So we greatly believe in Microsoft in the interoperability and openness. And in terms of that, we fully support VM mobility. You can bring your own VM, push it to cloud and run it on Windows Azure, capture it, and bring it down to on-premise as well. We fully support that model. Obviously, the VM is backed up by Windows Azure Storage. It is sitting in your store, so you can bring it back to on-premise if you need to as well. So it's completely mobile, and you can push it to the cloud or to bring it back. It's a VHD format, is open format, and it's also published to the open specification promise as well. All right, the other scenario that I'm going to cover is basically, okay, I hear that you also have a utility in the Windows Azure SDK called CSUpload. What is the purpose of that? What are the differences between using CSUpload versus my own favorite tool to upload a VM? The CSUpload is distributed in Windows Azure SDK, so if you download the latest Windows Azure 1.7 SDK that was released on June 7th, it has a utility called CSUpload. Bunch of things it does that many other upload tool or storage explorer doesn't do are primarily basic validation. So you don't want to be ending up in a situation after uploading a large VM having to know that this doesn't work. So this tool makes sure that it validates a bunch of scenarios to ensure that your VM is going to work on the cloud. So we do a few validation. We also do dynamic to fixed disk conversion on the fly. It's multi-threaded upload, so it's much, much faster. And it has a resume functionality. And most importantly, it does patching solution as well. So if you've already uploaded an image and you need to patch specific portions of it, if you have a patch that you need to roll, we can inject it easily as well. So these are the primary value proposition of using CSUpload that is being distributed through the Windows Azure SDK. All right, CSUpload under the covers also goes and registers your VM into the platform image gallery. So when I upload an image using CS Upload, it goes and registers that image, so it becomes available easily for you. You don't have to do any disk management as well. So essentially, it uses storage API, storage REST API, and uploads it onto Windows Azure in your customer storage account. You can bring your data disk as well as images and disks, operating system images and disks using this mode. So I wanted to pause here briefly to give you some guidelines in terms of what are the recommended approach here for bringing your VMs. I would primarily use the disk-based migration for application migration. If you have a large data for your SQL Server, this is probably the best way to bring your data file in the form of VHD onto Windows Azure. Bringing a sysprepped image is another option for you. If you need to bring your VM in a image, that's another option for you as well. So try it out. It is distributed through Windows Azure SDK. So primarily it'll cover both disk as well as image-based migration. All right. So a few things you need to remember: what works and what doesn't work. I briefly touched a little bit on this. As many of you know, when you are bringing a disk, there's a lot of times we cannot guarantee whether your sysIDs are going to be compatible with the host environment. So there are some, depending on the image that you're trying to run it on Windows Azure, you need to be careful about it. So I would strongly recommend image-based deployment when you're trying to bring your own VM from on-premise, and then use customization on the public cloud in Windows Azure if you wanted to do any customization on your VM as well. All right, just a quick recap in terms of the disk capabilities. So when you bring an OS disk, basically the maximum capacity is 127 gig. And the data disk max capacity is 1 terabyte. This is essentially the storage blob limitation. So depending on the VM size, you can go up to 16 terabytes of data disk for your VM. And obviously, imaging is capable. You can start a new imaging solution for an OS disk. It is not possible for a data disk. When you wanted to do a hot update, it is possible, absolutely. It requires reboot when it comes to OS disk. And you don't need a reboot for hot update for the data disk. All right, let's do some demo here. I'm going to switch back to my machine so I can give you a glimpse of all the things that I've talked about. All right, so let's start with image customization here. So one of the common pattern I get to see in Windows Azure platform is that when I want to run a web server, the vanilla Windows image is not ready for me. I need to install ASP.NET. I need to install IIS, IIS extension, bunch of open source content management application, web deploy for seamless deployment onto VMs. The vanilla VM is not so interesting for me. So what I did was basically I went ahead, I created a new instance from the stock image just like earlier. So basically I created a new image from a gallery from one of the platform images. In this particular case, I created one from Windows Server 2008 SP1. And then I RDP'd into this machine, installed all the software that I needed for my organization, web stack, web deploy, and a whole bunch of things. It took me nearly 2 hours to acquire all the software. What I did later was basically I want that to be used in the future for a repeatable purpose for my imaging solution. So I went to the command prompt, I did a sysprep, generalize, and shut it down. So when I did that, what happened was, wow, I have a small issue here. I can't see the, all right, is this still legible for you? Pardon? Okay, is this watchable?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. so this VM is the one that I sysprepped and generalized. This is the one that I can essentially now capture for repeatable purpose. So what I'm going to do here is that I'm going to say I would like to capture this VM, and I'm going to give a friendly name. This is a Contoso Web VM2, And this is a guidance that the portal gives for you to ensure that you've sysprepped this image. Yes, I have sysprepped it. When I click capture, this process will take a few minutes. When I click capture, it's going to capture this image, and it's going to make it available for me so I can use it for the repeated purpose. So it is still doing this, but I want to show you one of the images that I already captured that is already available right now for me. So when I go to gallery option again, just a second, virtual machine from the gallery. I seem to have some issues here. Just a second. Let me disconnect this and try reconnecting to this again. Hopefully this should work. All right. Let's try one more time here. All right. So right now there are a bunch of views here. This is an image, Contest of Web VM2 is the one that we've just captured that already shows up here. So this is the one I would use for my future repeatable imaging solution. So this is a scenario that I wanted to go over to demonstrate the value of capture, customizing a stock image, capturing it, and creating as part of your gallery so you can do repeatable VM solution. So this is the first demo I wanted to showcase. The second demo is essentially bring your own VMs. This is essentially, if you already have a heavy virtualization investment on-premise, you can use this technique to bring your existing images, disks as well. The first demo that I would like to show here is essentially how do I bring a data disk, particularly for SQL Server scenario. As many of you know, it's very easy to create a VHD file from Windows environment using the disk manager. And you can bring your application as well as data file in the form of VHD and use a CS upload to upload it onto Windows Azure. It's a very straightforward command line utility. It's shipped as part of Windows Azure SDK. So you give the endpoint of your URL and the source file and the destination file, it'll get uploaded. I'll just run one of the sample here. So the add data disk is a command file that encapsulates this CS upload command. So in this particular case, it's uploading a small 100 meg data file that contains SQL data, and it uploads it onto Windows Azure. So this is the name of the disk that we just VHD file that we just uploaded. It should immediately show up. Just to go back here into the virtualization under the disk, I should see a new data disk here. It's right here. So this is the one that we just uploaded. Similarly, you can bring virtual machines, images, as well as disk using the same method as well. So I have one more command line utility here. This is essentially upload image. It is very, very straightforward. Here, again, I'm uploading a virtual machine into my image gallery. Just to recap on the value of CS upload, it goes and registers into the platform image gallery. If you also have a differential disk, it converts dynamic to fixed disk on the fly as well. So let's go ahead and run the upload image. This is, again, a small 100 meg VM. So this one should show up under the images section very shortly. So let's take a look at this. This is essentially named as on-prem VM Techhead 1. So when I go back to the portal, under the images section, so on-prem. On-prem ticket one. Yeah, it's right here. So depending on your bandwidth connection, it can take. Typically about 10 gigs of VHD file on a decent network can be uploaded in about 20 minutes. So, and it does retry, and it also has multi-threaded capability, so it's a lot faster as well. So this is one solution. Unfortunately, I had this networking issue. I have to connect to my VPN server in order to show this third demo. Let me quickly connect there. So the third demo I'm going to show here is essentially bringing your own VM. And how many of you here are using System Center for managing your virtualized on-premise environment? OK, a few of you. OK, great. So this is essentially part of System Center 2012, SP1. So I'm going to go back to this window. This is essentially a Silverlight portal-based solution. This is essentially part of System Center App Controller. App Controller enables you to manage your private cloud, public cloud, and your on-premise cloud as well in a cohesive way. And it allows you to manage as well as deploy your workloads seamlessly as well. So first, I wanted to show you how this is set up. So essentially, in App Controller, it gives you a granular role-based access control within your corporate environment using Active Directory. So I can create a bunch of roles, and I can assign people to them in terms of what they can do in the on-premise environment. Can they publish certain images into Windows Azure? Can they publish into this private cloud or that private cloud? We can completely control that using a role-based access control, which Windows Azure doesn't have today. So if you are heavily into private cloud, and if you are a Windows customer and System Center customer, this is a great way of bringing your own VM from on-premise to public cloud. So here, it gives you a bunch of roles where there is an administrator role, DevOps role, and engineering role as well. So for instance, if your developers doesn't need to have production access, you can control that granular in a granular way here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to virtual machine. Before I came to the virtual machine, I have already set up my Windows Azure subscription, private cloud subscription, and also access to my local environment, local network in App Controller already. So it immediately aggregates every VM that I have access to and showcases that in a nice way in this virtual machines window. So as you see here, some of these VMs are from Windows Azure. Some of them are local on-prem one. So for instance, I have a VHD file that is sitting in my on-prem local. This is something I can migrate to Windows Azure seamlessly from here. So I can click Migrate, and it'll immediately figure out which cloud would you like to deploy this into. Would you like to deploy into a private cloud VMM environment or in a public cloud such as Windows Azure? Here I'm going to select Windows Azure. I'm going to use my subscription here for Windows Azure. It will immediately understand the Windows Azure terminologies and the service model. And from here onwards, you can create a new cloud service for your based on the VM that you are bringing as well. So I'm not going to go through this completely. So basically, this is to really showcase that you have multiple ways of bringing your own VM from on-premise on to Windows Azure seamlessly. So here, once I complete the visit, it'll deploy this virtual machine, a disk or an image-based deployment onto Windows Azure. All right, moving back onto my slides. So just to recap, we saw an image-based customization using the capture functionality, bringing your own disks and VMs from on-premise using CS Upload, why you should use it, and finally we talked about the migration from VMM and System Center App Controller. So quick bird's eye view of the technology behind launching a virtual machine. This has been repeated multiple times, but I thought I'll quickly recap this as well. Essentially, what happens under the covers when you create a VM? So basically, when you start to create a VM, essentially it goes through the portal or through the API or through the PowerShell, and we essentially use Windows Setup and create an unattended file as well. All the provisioning details are captured in the form of an ISO. And then based on the provisioning details you've given us, we go to the image gallery and then make a copy of the image that you requested into customer, your storage account, depending on the data disk as well as the OS disk. And then the provisioning process kicks off, and we create a cache of this. I'll explain that a little later. And then in the cache, we pass in all the provisioning details, and then your OS information and the data disks are provisioned into your VM. And finally, based on the provisioning details that you're given in the ISO file, such as your computer name, the endpoints that you've defined are fed into this provisioning process, and your virtual machine is created. This is a quick tour of how, under the covers, we do VM creation. Why is this important? I'll come to that very shortly here. So what we do is basically in the provisioning option, we capture basic information such as computer name. But the few things that we do are under the covers are we turn on Windows Update for you. What you need to remember is that when you have multiple virtual machines, your Windows Update is not coordinated between multiple VMs within a cloud service. This is something you'll have to coordinate and manage. So keep in mind about that in terms of how you wanted to do the patching solution for your VMs. Certificate deployment is another thing that's been handled. We configure all the ports you have modeled through the provisioning process. For instance, if you have enabled port 80 for your web traffic, RDP port, these are all fed into the provisioning process. And also, we modify the disk configuration and the cache and adding a data disk in terms of provisioning as well. These are the key things that we do in the provisioning process. So once your VM is up, this is how it looks. Basically, your clients or the client machines can access your virtual machines using the load balancer through a public virtual IP. And depending on your service, depending on the number of VMs you have, if you have gone through the portal and if you have created the quick create option, we automatically create a cloud service under the cover for you. So that's like a container for you. So you may find that sometimes that when you delete a VM, your cloud service would still be around. So don't get confused. Whenever you create a VM through the quick create option, we automatically create a container for you in the form of cloud service as well. So in this particular case, we have two VMs created under a cloud service, and both have an IP here. The communication between the VMs is totally wide open. We enable, by default, the internal endpoints with any protocol. So the traffic between internal endpoint is wide open, but the input through the load balancer, through the virtual IP, is modeled by you, and that needs to be configured through the endpoint section in the VM. And obviously, these VMs are backed up by the Windows Azure Storage. When you get the REST payload back, there are a couple of subtle things I want you to always remember that's very, very important. One is essentially the instance status. That determines what state the VM is in, whether it's ready. Sometimes it comes as unknown as well. You need to know when you're trying to create a virtualized machine from an image that you have captured. So knowing the instance status is super, super important when you're creating an imaging solution. The second thing is the media link. Where is your VM being stored under the covers in the storage? So this is very interesting because sometimes when you capture the VM, Windows Azure gives a name for your VM. And it comes out as really, really cryptic. Right now, we don't have a good convention in terms of naming the VMs. It's a cryptic file name. So knowing that media link name is super important as well. So these two things I thought I'll call out here. And when you do a get deployment REST API call, you'll see the blob of XML. And these two things are super important for you to do any image-based solution. Few other things that we do. By default, we configure the RDP for you. This is part of the provisioning pipeline. You give the RDP, we create the RDP file for you. You can download the RDP file as well. Windows Update is turned on by default. We recommend Windows Update as a primary way of keeping your VMs up to date from security and patches. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, currently, we are, as part of the V1, we have very limited capabilities in terms of the provisioning process to customize a VM. For instance, you may want to light up certain roles in your Windows server. You may want to download certain software. These are a little limited right now in the version 1.0 timeframe. The best way of acquiring software is through WebPI or bringing your own data disk or from the web. I'll be showcasing some solution and guidance in terms of how to accelerate deployment as well. We'll come to that very shortly. So for a single VM scenario, acquiring software is primarily through web platform installer or through interactively over RDP or through an FTP server or connecting a VNet to your CopNet to download your application software. And obviously, this is where capture process is super, super important. So you don't have to repeat this every time when you create a VM. You have a baseline VM that already has your application stack that you can start from. All right, so a few other things when it comes to protocol. We support UDP traffic through the load balancer. As I mentioned earlier, VM to VM is wide open. We also have probes, health check based on probes that helps you to make sure when the VM goes down, you can handle in your application. And we have the port forwarded endpoints for communication, direct communication across multiple VMs that you can configure through input endpoints. All right, let's switch gears right now. Now I wanted to focus purely, if you are a cloud-based ISV or if you're building solutions on top of other cloud, this is a topic that might be interesting to you. The portal that you saw yesterday, the management portal, is completely based on the public REST protocols that we expose from the platform. Over the next few minutes, you are going to see from our partners, RightScale and Scale Extreme, how they built a cloud-based deployment and monitoring and management platform on top of us. So all the APIs that you saw for managing VMs, creation, deletion, are all exposed through REST APIs. Just to remind everyone, if you're used to the service management APIs for Windows Azure Platform as a Service, web worker role, this is an extension to that. So basically what we have done is in the management.core.windows.net, we have expanded the footprint to support VMs. So right now we support primitives such as images, disks, and others in the service management API. So it's the same service management APIs with full support for virtual machines. So you have pretty much APIs for everything from a VM operation perspective, you know, creating a virtual machine. You may see some terminology misused right now. You know, that's something we will be correcting in the future. Right now, to create a VM, there is a API, REST API called add role, because as you can imagine, we came from the lineage, we came from the PaaS model, so we are still using some of those primitives here as well. So pretty much you can do anything using API for a virtual machine that's exposed through portal and beyond. That's the tip of the bird, you know, for you to know about all the APIs here. Just a couple of samples here. This is a creation over XML, the post method here. As you can see here, I'm passing all the provisioning details over REST. This one is a capture process. How do I capture a REST call? Very straightforward. What is a new machine name that I wanted to say? All those capture options are provided over REST as well. Not only that, we will be supporting, we recognize the openness of the platform. So eventually we will have a client libraries in .NET, PHP, Java, and other languages as well. So this is an area we will continue to invest as well. In the fall timeframe, we will have service management library in .NET fully supported by Microsoft. So that will give you a speed dial to the overall footprint of the service management layer. At the launch event last week, we also announced PowerShell. Many of you who are operating Windows environment, we know that you need a PowerShell capability to automate VM creation. So we have full PowerShell capability using the Windows Azure commandlet that has support for subscription management, storage, diagnostics, and the whole virtual machines as well. All right, so it's extremely straightforward. We have followed all the conventions of the native PowerShell commandlets. So I will be showing a demo very shortly, and we can go through that. So now, at this time, I would like to invite Nan, whose organization has been working with us very closely for the last few months. I wanted to show how cloud vendors are building on top of our platform. So Nan, take it away.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. Well, thank you, Vijay. And let me actually go through the slides one second. I think we have two slides at all.
Yes.
I won't bore you to death with slides here, but I think just a little bit of setup. So as Vijay pointed out, we're a cloud-based partner of Microsoft's. It's been awesome working with them. And you'll actually see some of the really interesting things when they talk about an open platform. I hope the demo that I'll show you will fully convince those of you who are still not believing the fact that Microsoft is supporting Linux and some of these open technologies here. It's real. So we're a cloud-based systems management product. It's instant on. It's cloud-based. You go to our website, set up a free account, and within about 5 minutes, you could be managing your Windows Azure deployment. It's literally that easy. And we have actually a number of customers working with us right now actually who are managing their instances on Azure. Actually, one of the things that Vijay pointed out is patch management. That's actually something we We actually do for Windows and Linux today. So if one of your concerns or problems with in terms of moving a VM over to the cloud and you have concerns about security or compliance or other things, Scale Extreme is a great, great product to look into to see if you can actually get over that. One of the key things, everything I'll show you here in the demo is built on those management APIs. So that's actually one of the critical points to realize is that, you know, production, industrial strength management products like ours and RightScales are built on open APIs. There's no hidden APIs that they have in the back that the other groups are using. It's all completely out there. And, you know, as I said, we've been working with them for a couple of months. It's been great. So all you need to do, if you any of you have laptops and are on the web, you can actually do this right now. Just go to skillextreme.com/free. This is actually, the Azure support is in production, so it's not beta or early access. You can go there and use it right now. And you just drop an agent on an existing server or a launch a new one completely from scratch, and your Windows or Linux VM on Azure will actually light up and show up in our console that I'll show you in a second here. And this functionality, patch, job automation, monitoring, everything is instantly on. So there's no waiting period or anything. It just happens. So let's switch to the demo. This is a live demo. So I will make sure that I have the appropriate sort of caveats here. So let me start by showing you the actual product. There are actually two screens. I'm going to switch through sort of one that's more populated just so you get a full sort of idea of the product, and then I'll dive into a Azure-specific one that that actually shows off some of the specific Azure features there and pieces. So one of the things is we're in a in the product here, and the first thing you realize is that it gives you a federated view of all of your different clouds. And adding Azure is literally as simple as adding a cloud provider here, and you just click plus there, and in a second it'll show up based on the network connection. And one of the things that Microsoft has done phenomenally well is when you add Azure as a provider, all you need to do is just grab the publisher profile, and boom, your account is linked. Now, here is all of your Azure systems once you actually link on the click on the link there. And it'll basically, it's talking live to the Azure platform, retrieving all of the VMs live, and it'll show you a list over on the right here. So I apologize for the speech. So here we go. So we've got six servers over at Azure, a couple of Windows machines, a couple of Linux boxes. And by the way, I don't know if there's a prize for showing the most non-Microsoft demo here at this conference, because as you can see, I'm on a Mac running a Chrome web browser, have Linux VMs running in the back, and I actually have an iPhone as well, which you can actually launch Azure machines directly from your iPhone with our product. So I think I'd probably win the contest here. Now, once you actually drop an agent, a Scale Extreme agent, on your Azure systems, and we have auto installers using RDP or SSH, they show up basically in your unified view here. So here's an internal machine running behind our firewall in San Mateo, and here's actually an Azure Ubuntu machine. Here's some Amazon machines, some Rackspace machines, and some Windows machines. And as you can see, there's patch management all built in, and everything you're seeing here is fully supported on Azure. So if you actually want to do patch management, for instance, we give you sort of a single, simple view of that. So with that, let me switch over to the Azure-specific pieces and show you how easy it is to use the system with it. So we have an Azure account right here, and I've got a couple of VMs running, and these are actually, this is actually an Azure VM running here. It's running CentOS. It's the OpenLogic CentOS box, and here's a EC2 machine running, actually, CentOS as well. So one of the cool things you can do with our product is you can set up, as Vijay pointed out, this idea of building stacks. So if you want to create a repeatable process to crank out web servers like pancakes, what you can do is create something we call templates. And the basic idea is you can create a template. It's very easy to do. You can link it to a provider or resource. I'll show you that. And here's a set of installers. And in this case, this will install LAMP, which is the Apache PHP MySQL stack, configure IP tables on the Linux box, and then deploy some code. So with that, we'll just launch the template, and we're now talking in a second here. We can actually choose, we're going to choose this instance of Azure account that we have. And we're going to configure the instant details. So everything going on right now is talking live to the Azure system over the REST APIs to retrieve all the data. And takes a couple of seconds. This is actually one of our development systems, so it's a little slower than usual. But the basic idea is once you've actually launched the system, it'll pop out a LAMP server with code on it fully deployed there. And I think I'm having a couple of seconds of delay here. It'll show up. And while that's happening, let me make sure this. Yes, please.
Yeah, you're showing how you do you're showing patches for like Windows.
Yeah.
We have custom software installed. Can you configure patches for that?
We currently cannot because we need some sort of an update server coming from that application vendor, but that's coming soon. We're going to be sweeping more and more applications into it. Currently, it's primarily platform. And we support actually both Linux and Windows. So all of the Linux boxes that you're running on Azure will also be patched exactly the same way. So this showed up here, and we're going to choose the CentOS image here. And you just set up a new virtual machine name. So everything that Vijay showed you on the management console, everything you're seeing here, it's exactly the same. And so we can pick up a standalone virtual machine, the storage piece, and then I'll just set up a quick piece here. We'll add port forwarding so that we can open the HTTP port 80 and 80, just so that we can actually look at the web server. Oops. They're very picky about security. And so here we go. So we're ready to launch. And so this actually now is configured an instance in Azure that we're actually going to launch and call through the APIs. And we go next. And this will actually now, each of the scripts that I have can take input parameters, like what port should Apache run on or MySQL. I'm just going to leave the defaults and go finish. So now this template has actually been launched here. And it's actually going to crank through these four steps and actually get you something. But instead of boring all of you with watching the server come up, I actually launched one earlier. And so at the end, it pops out an IP address. And this is basically the IP address that this web server is going to run on. So we're actually just going to paste and go. And boom. So here's a picture of my son. But basically says that the system is running and everything. And everything that you're seeing here, automation in terms of the updates and status and everything, all shows up on your iPhone. So you can download the Scale Extreme iPhone app. All of your notifications come there. So with that, thank you. Thank you, Vijay. Thank you, Microsoft.
Thank you.
And yes.
Is this deployable with single VMs, or can I deploy groups like
No, you can do full groups as well.
Yeah.
Like server templates and system center?
So similar concepts. Yes, exactly. Very much like a deployment on Azure, basically using that as the platform, deploying that on top.
Correct. Thank you, Nan. This is great. And just to recap quickly, one more thing that Nan pointed out. The management portal today allows you to only deploy one virtual machine in a sequential way. The PowerShell already supports that. You can create a cloud service with hundreds of VMs. I will show that shortly as well. Great. Thank you, Nan. Excellent. All right, let's go back to the slides real quick. All right, I'm going to cruise through the next set of pointers for you. These are basically some do's and don'ts and some caveats in our current version. So you need to know about SLA. What is our SLA? And primarily, we offer 99.95 if you have availability set, if you have multiple VMs. So that's the best way to guarantee 99.95 available SLA for your application. For single instance VM, we have 99.99% VM SLA as well. So what is included in as part of our SLA? Essentially, any compute hardware failure, data center failures, and hardware upgrades and software maintenance at the host level. You are responsible for the VM. So if you're running a third-party software and that crashes, we are not responsible for it. So any guest OS patches are also not covered under our SLA. So how do you build a highly available solution? This is a topic that many of you have asked me in the booth as well. We have the concept of fault domain and update domain. And in particularly for infrastructure as a service, to have high availability of 99.95, we recommend that you have multiple virtual machines. So if you're creating a web application, have more than one VMs supported by an availability set. This way, you can have 99.95 SLA. So I have an example of a highly available SQL implementation. Here I have 99.9 single instance SQL server. I also have two SQL servers backed by an availability set that supports 99.95. So when one VM goes down, you have the another one available for you. So if you're building a multi-tier application, how do I build redundancy at every layer? So this is a pattern that to demonstrate that you could have an application where you could have SQL mirroring between master and slave, principal and slave, and you could have this topology at the database tier. Your middle tier could have multiple virtual machines that will also have availability set. And your web tier, either whether it's running on Windows Azure in the virtual machine or using a web role, it'll also be backed by availability set as well. So as a holistic end-to-end application, you can build redundancy at every layer. So this is a recap on the SLA. So this is another scenario in terms of highly available application pattern where you have redundant database server, middle tier, and front end. I wanted to briefly cover how our partner SharePoint has implemented SharePoint on Azure. I will be doing a demo where you will understand how this all comes together. The key scenario that I wanted you to leave with is essentially, if you have a large enterprise application and you wanted to ensure that all the machine have the same capabilities of your domain controller, how do I make sure that it's replicated and orchestrated? So SharePoint requires a DC, it has on-premise connectivity, you need it in a virtualized network environment as well. This is a very complex configuration. So I will be showcasing this in a demo to demonstrate how do you automate all these things. If you have multiple virtual machines that needs to have all the software, group policies, how do you do that? So we'll go through that very shortly. So I think we'll be covering all these demos, in particularly building a complex LOB application involving a DC and a network, virtualized network in this demo, so you'll know this better when I go through that. Finally, I wanted to leave you with, hey, we are already a Windows Azure customer. We are using your web and worker role, but we also like persistence on your virtual machines. We would like to use SQL Server with web and worker role. What do you support today? What do you don't support today? So I want you to know some of the patterns and practices around it. The first thing is basically you can connect two deployments or two tenants, one cloud service that has a web and worker role, another cloud service that has virtual machines, using the load balancer and through the public virtual IP. Right? So when you do that, the strength is essentially, if you have a database team and your web tier team separate from each other, and they wanted to iterate fast, this is a beautiful configuration. In other words, if you have a large reporting database that's being utilized by millions of front-end clients, and they need to access that database through the web, this could be a scenario for you as well. So you're mixing and matching our cloud services that has web and worker role with infrastructure as a service here. Few caveats you need to remember. Yes, this is a simple architecture. You have total autonomy between tenants. You don't have to depend on two teams having to come together. It's not a single unit of work. Your web tier team can innovate on their own pace, and your database team can move on their own pace. It's easy for dev test, and you can use your existing platform as a service primitives. You can do a web swap at your web tier without having to worry about your database and all these things. There are some weaknesses here. Because you're going over the load balancer using the public WIP, it's going to be you will experience high latency here. And another factor to remember is that most organizations don't support you to have SQL Server exposed through the public WIP. This is how SQL Azure is running. You are using a connection string over HTTP over a WIP. So that is something to remember. Depending on your organizational security requirements, you may not be able to expose your database server over the WIP. So this is one of the options. The second option, which is the most recommended one that I would like to recommend here, is that you can create a virtualized network between your cloud service that is running web and worker role and a virtual machine. Through this, you can build a virtualized network and build a highly secure network communication between your front end and your web tier. So in this model, it is also simple. You can easily create a VNet virtual network using the management portal or PowerShell or API. Here also, you continue to exercise a full autonomy between your tenants. Your web team can iterate on their own pace. Database team can iterate on their pace. You can use this for your local dev test testing as well. And easily, it's accessible. You can use existing primitives, and it's highly secure as well. So this is the difference between the options available between the previous one and this one. This one will also have low latency. So when you are connecting from your web role to the virtual machine, that connection is over dynamic IP, which is dip to dip. It's an internal IP address, so it's going to be much, much faster, and it's also secure as well. We are also working closely with our customers and with our partners within the company to build a single deployment model where you can deploy web, worker, and VM role as part of the same workload, and you can seamlessly deploy this. This is something that we are looking into this. Most likely, we will have it by the end of this year. All right. I wanted to show some of the patterns I have explained to create a multi-tier web application or a line of business application involving a domain controller. Let me explain this a little bit in my demo. All right. So first thing I wanted to showcase the network topology I have created here. So as you notice here, I have a virtual network here. And within that network, I have created a domain controller, and I've created a VM, and RDP'd into the VM, went to the Windows Azure, Windows Active Directory Domain Services, and created a domain service, and made it as the DC for that network. And then after that, when I created new virtual machines, I have added all those machines to that domain controller machine. So it's all part of one large network. Few things that I've done in the domain controller are by establishing certain policies, group policies that can be replicated to all the machines, such as Windows Update Service, so that all your machines can be coordinated in terms of the patches, software installations across all these machines. Remember, I showed you how expensive it is to customize your machine, that you have to capture it. I have automated that in the form of group policy. So whenever a new machine is domain joined, you automatically install software into this machine as well. The third thing is I've also enabled remote management as well. So you can manage all these VMs within this network seamlessly as well. Let's go ahead and take a look at this in the virtualized VM here. I think my RDP connection died here. So I'm going to close this. I'm going to go back to my virtual machines node and connect to my demo DC here. This is my domain controller, so I'm going to RDP into this VM. Remember, this is the main primary domain controller for me. I will explain this when this is connected. It's still thinking. I think we've been having some network issues here. While this is coming up, I'm sure it's going to come. I'll just show you the bird's eye view of the API surface. This is all the XML that goes back and forth between our platform when you create a new deployment. This is a simple tool to demonstrate my deployment. So basically, I've used my certificate to connect here. Connect to this URL. As you see here, it pulls down all the things that I have as part of my deployment, essentially. So I'm allowed basically maximum core limit of 40, and my utilization here. From here, I can look at all the existing hosted services or the cloud services that I have got, and you can look at the payload of XML going back and forth between the client and the server. So pretty much all the things that the portal does today can be developed by and integrated by a line of business application as well. So when this comes, you can see the deployments that I have and the running virtual machines as part of this exposed through XML. So this is REST over HTTP primarily. So, okay. So as you see here, these are all the cloud services that I have in my deployment. As you see, I have plenty here. I'm going to connect to one of them and show you an existing production deployment to show you the XML behind a running virtual machine. So I think it's coming back right now. Let's give it a sec. All right. So as you notice here, this is the DNS entry for that cloud service. And underneath that, it has a role name. And this is a VM name and the instance of the VM. And you can see the public endpoint of this and the instance size and all the port mapping we have between RDP and others. And primarily, the power state is an important thing that I went through earlier. You can look at that. And if you have multiple VMs, this XML also articulates the upgrade domain and fault domain in which they are placed. So this way, you can understand the full topology of your application. All right, let's go back to this VM and see if it has come back. Yes, it has come back. So as I mentioned earlier, this is my primary domain controller as part of the virtual network. And a few things that I'm doing here to improve the software acquisition, when a new machine is domain joined, I can seamlessly install software into this so that the machine is ready for this. So for instance, as part of the software policy setting, group policy setting, I'm installing web platform installer into this machine when a new machine is domain joined. I also have a bunch of other policies, such as Windows Update Service, that I will go through here. This tells you how all the under in my all the machines are being patched in my domain controller. So let's take a look at it. So this tells you a visibility, gives you a visibility into the patching service from Windows Update. Then I have enabled remote management as well, so I can show you that as well real quick. So basically, when I do add server, you can see all the servers that are in this domain, and from here I can seamlessly connect to each one of them as well. So I've in this particular case I've already added all of them here, so I could go ahead and add all of them. So. Just a second. All right. So these are the other machines that are joined in the domain. I can seamlessly manage it right from within here. I can remote PowerShell into this. I can do an RDP access and manage them seamlessly from here as well. So I have a remote PowerShell into another VM that is domain joined as part of this VNet. And I can do an IP config, and you can see the IP address of this one. This is the 10.2.4, which is another machine here. And this is app VM1. So to put all these things together, essentially, you can enable Windows Server group policy to automate many things in a virtualized network environment, to do patch management, to install software, and to apply many other policies as well seamlessly. This will come super handy when you're running a large line of business application, SharePoint-like workload on Windows Azure. All right, at this stage, I'm going to go back to my presentation. All right. So now, I wanted to give another dimension to our platform. At this stage, I would like to invite Shivan, who's been working with us greatly and has given us tremendous feedback from RightScale. They've built a phenomenal solution on top of our platform as well. So at this stage, I would like to Shivan to give you a demo of that.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Vijay. So thank you, Vijay, for the opportunity to speak with you here and join you on stage. So what RightScale is, just a very brief overview. We're a cloud management solution that not only operates in the clouds, but helps customers bridge the gap between their applications and the underlying cloud-based infrastructure below them. And really at the heart of all of what RightScale does is automation. We are in the business of automating cloud infrastructure so that you as an organization can focus on your business critical applications. So when we think about what that actually translates to, everything we do is automation. There are pieces of that that break down into customization of how you can automate your deployments with abstractions built into that to the level of degree that you're comfortable with. There's the component also with larger organizations where you need to have visibility and control, not to the extent to limit, but more to be able to operate at scale effectively. This includes things like reporting, this includes things like cost projections, but also the ability to provide role-based access into actions you can perform on those cloud environments. And of course, we've been in this business for, you know, since for a very long time now, 6 years. Can you believe that with cloud? That's like a lifetime. And so we also have a level of expertise, both with our support and services teams, that will help customers adopt cloud and really leverage that for their organizations. Again, focusing or enabling your team to now focus on your business-critical applications. So with Windows Azure, what RightScale has really been doing over the past several months is a number of things, broken down very concretely to a tight integration on the REST-based interfaces that Vijay has spent a lot of time talking about. Two interfaces in particular, the service management APIs and the storage services API. A lot of complexity here, a lot of very transparent, great functionality, but again, also a lot of complexity here that RightScale as an integration layer between the cloud and customers or users of cloud, that abstraction layer really helps to make things more digestible. You don't have to worry about the two different authentication mechanisms that are available with the service management API versus the storage services API. You don't have to worry about how resources are abstracted within one versus the other and how you can leverage disks across the two APIs. Within RightScale, it's all just exposed as one common resource called volumes with snapshots and the ability to track how a volume associates to a volume snapshot and so on and so forth. But within RightScale, customers really focus on how to use cloud. So the operational and the management tasks are really what RightScale as a platform focuses on. And today we have solutions available for infrastructure as a service with WISA and LampStax. So complete Windows offering, complete Linux-based offering. And of course, what I also want to emphasize here is that with any really great partnership with, such as with Microsoft and RightScale, this is an evolving nature, right? We are going to be increasing our level of integration across the entire Windows Azure platform, both on-premise and off-premise, right? So that whole hybrid story that you heard about last Thursday, as well as on Monday in the keynotes, very well ties back to what RightScale has been promoting since day one, which is it's a multi-cloud world. You're going to be using a variety of resource pools based on what your business objectives are and what you need to be accomplishing in cloud, and that's what RightScale can help you with. So let's go ahead and dive in to the demo. I wanted to, if we can switch screens.
Yes.
Great. So I wanted to show you, this is the RightScale login here. This is my user that I'm logging into. And what I'm logging into is a RightScale system, but what I have access to is an account. So as a user, I have access to an account. Within this account, I have access primarily to the Windows Azure cloud. Now, again, we are a multi-cloud management platform. Any number of clouds could be present here. And these resources here are what are available or what the clouds make available for automation on top. So these are the primitives, so to speak, that Windows Azure makes available. But I want to cover three basic concepts within RightScale which exist above this layer, which is deployments, server templates, and servers. So what we have in deployments, and I'll go to one running right now, is a collection of servers that effectively serve a purpose. You could have a production deployment versus a staging deployment versus a developer sandbox deployment. You could have, depending on if you're just now getting to, and I'm going to use this term very loosely, SaaSifying your former legacy application. You could be running customers individually in each deployment. A variety of use cases here, but again, that construct is a group of servers that are serving a purpose. We also have server templates. Server templates are a blueprint for how you launch servers reproducibly, consistently, and reliably on cloud. So we talked a little bit about how you can use a base image or from the stock gallery and build up on top of that, customize your VM, and then start using it. Well, with RightScale, you can automate all of that provisioning, additional customization that you would do on top of that base image, build that into your server template, and then every time you launch, that system will come up consistently and reliably in the same manner. And then you have servers, which are effectively instantiations of those server templates. So let's look at this demo that I have here. I have a deployment that's running a .NET app called Nerd Dinner. What I have here is I have a load balancer running HAProxy, a software at level 7, L7 type of software load balancer. It's running on top of CentOS 6. And then I have a Windows IIS application server running Nerd Dinner, which some of you may be familiar with. And also two database servers, one being the principal and then, of course, mirroring to another database server. So if I look at what that application is, it's really just this, right? Let me just go back and make sure everything's good. So here, let's see what do I have here. This environment has been used by others as well. And what I'm seeing is the database, the principal is up. It's operational. But the mirror has just been launched. It's booting. What's happening here under the covers is WriteScale. Somebody went into WriteScale, hit create a mirror on this server, and is automatically creating that mirror and creating that the data flow from the principal to mirror to stand-up mirroring. So this is going to actually limit my demo a little bit since this is not fully operational. But what I was going to show is, so I have this application, Nerd Dinner, and I can log in. I can do all the stuff that I'd be comfortable with doing on this application, including hosting dinners and whatnot. Oh, launch was unsuccessful because somebody probably deleted my user. So let's create a new user. So I've created a new user. I can host a dinner. I can do whatever I want. Test. So this application is actually running. It's on the cloud. It's nerddinner.test.writescale.com if anybody's interested in logging in. But now when I come back here, what would happen, for example, if there was a catastrophic failure? My database went down. Well, since my mirror isn't up right now, I can't actually show this demo, so the demo gods aren't really working with me right now. But presumably what I could do is I could go in, I could take a look at this server, and to simulate the error happening, I could simply terminate this database manager. And obviously, now my application is hosed, right? NoSQL Server database connected to my application. A system administrator someplace is pulling his head. He's trying to figure out what he can do from there. It's very simple what he could do from there. If I had my mirror running, what I would simply go in and do is I would go into that. Oh, there it is, actually. It is running. So you know what? I'm going to actually do this. Let's go back and terminate. Ooh, we have a confirmation. How am I doing on time? We're good? OK, good. So it's now currently decommissioning. If I go back to the application and I refresh, we will see a failure soon. It's waiting. Still there. Let's see what's happening. So we can see on the left-hand side here, the database manager for Microsoft SQL Server 2012 is decommissioning. It was requested 30 seconds ago, and it's still decommissioning. While that's happening, let's go ahead and take a look at what's available through the WriteScale dashboard otherwise. There's a lot of stuff baked into server templates to start with. We have monitoring available and auto-scaling. So if I look at this application server, you'll notice here I'm looking at a CPU graph, and I'll expand that in just a moment. But what I also have is an application server array, and this is effectively WriteScale's auto-scaling solution. With this server in particular, I'm experiencing load. Somebody's accessing and making requests on this application. And you can see, based on our monitoring, that this load right now, because it's a demo, is sinusoidal. What's happening is we have HTTP perf running on a different machine on Windows Azure, throwing load, making requests on this application. And what's happening is, as the load increases, the server is saying, oh my god, my thresholds are being hit. I'm running above 60%, closer to 70% of CPU utilization. WriteScale, help me. It's voting up, and I'm using some terms here that I can clarify later, but it's voting up its need for assistance. And what WriteScale recognizes that as is to launch additional servers. So within that auto-scaling server array, you will see additional servers coming online, which is right here on the left-hand side. You'll see that application servers have become operational as a result of the auto-scaling capabilities within WriteScale. And so that server array would look like this below here at the bottom. And I've got two operational. One's actually coming up. And again, this is all triggered automatically through the system with that server itself saying, hey, my CPU is under load. I need to get some help. Okay. So now let's go back to the application. We see that it's still decommissioning. But let's see if the application is actually down now. Great. So the application is down, right? There's no way for me to recover, except for I do have a mirror. So I'm going to go ahead and click on the mirror in the server. With WriteScale, you also have that server template where you can run boot operations to configure the server from the ground up. You also have operational tasks that you can perform. Here I have a section of scripts that are PowerShell-based. It's pure PowerShell. And in a moment, I'll show you what that PowerShell looks like. But I also have a script here that says promote to principal. So I'm going to take this script, and I'm going to run it. But I didn't need to click on that script. So let's go back. The screen resolution here. One sec. Let's click on the mirror again. Click on scripts. Scroll back down to promote principal. And here I'm just going to click the play button. And this is going to run this script on the mirror. And effectively what it's going to do is through WriteScale, it's going to promote the mirror to principal. We're using DNS in this case to have the application servers connect to the database. And so it's going to automatically update DNS as well. And what's going to happen across this and effectively towards maintaining that business critical application is that application is simply going to recover. So for all intents and purposes, all I've done is I've logged in, clicked on a script, and I've now promoted my mirror to a principal. And as this is running, you'll see here on the left, it's initializing the mirror. It's querying tags. Tags are a WriteScale terminology for how we recognize servers within a deployment. Again, these are all things that WriteScale makes available to automate or to help automation. If I click back over here, eventually this server will come back up. It's probably going to take a little while. So in the meantime, let's take a look at what that PowerShell script looked like. Right? If I click on this script, you'll see PowerShell in the dashboard here itself. You can write PowerShell directly in here. And through WriteScale, you can run that locally, not as a remote script, but locally through our agent onto the boxes themselves. So pretty configurable in that sense, too, because these scripts are available from WriteScale, and you can customize them as you need to. If I go back and I see here, some things have completed. It's running, and I go back to the Nerd Dinner application. Let's see if the system's back up yet. Still coming up. Absolutely. You can certainly do auto failover as well. There are best practices involved here, and of course this is a demo, so I wanted to show somebody actually going in and manually clicking. One thing to note here is that as I decommission the server, it's now inactive. It no longer has a public VIP. The database that's a mirror is still operational, and it should be pretty close. This doesn't take very long. It's just a few minutes. So it's still coming up. But yes, the answer to your question is yes. You can certainly do automatic failover. You can configure your server to have a heartbeat. You could even, through our server templates, you also can stand up a witness that can vote in on when the principal actually goes down. And you can promote automatically through the witness, too. So absolutely, you can do that. So I'm going to keep hitting refresh, because I know this is going to come up. But in the meantime, are there any other questions that I can answer? We can switch back then. This will come up afterwards. I'm not going to touch it. You can see that it will come up. And you can also go to nerddinner.test.writescale.com to see it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Shivan. Stay back here. while it's coming, I just wanted to quickly summarize what we've gone through today. Primarily, we started with provisioning, bringing your own VM, some of the best practices in terms of provisioning. We've talked about App Controller. If you've invested in System Center, how do you migrate your virtual machines from on-premise to public cloud? Then we moved on to a couple of partners focusing primarily around building on top of a REST platform, building grid management and monitoring platform on top of Windows Azure. So we also went through some bunch of patterns in terms of domain-based, domain join-based distributed application. How do you manage those? So I hope this was useful for you. Please give us your feedback. And if you have any questions, we'll be around to answer right now. And on behalf of Microsoft, it's been a great pleasure to work with RightScale and Scale Extreme, and I want to thank them as well. Please come on over, Dan. Are there any questions that we can answer? Yeah, currently for Microsoft software, you can do a domain-based one, but the other third-party ones you have to manage on your own. Today, it's not coordinated. You have to run it manually. That's This is where the partners like Scale Extreme and.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing something on Linux, you would probably just do package updates, and in that situation, Yum. You know, tends to be obviously a pretty popular one, or APT. We do, you know, either of those, you know, from our product, but you can also do those manually if you like. On Windows, then, as Vijay pointed out, you probably have to do more of a package-based installation. What tends to happen there is you would either set up one of the VNets, you know, go back to a central storage system where you have the MSIs and the software deployed, and then just have it blasted out to different systems. In the cloud, it gets a little tricky because then you have to upload it into a central system, and then all the other machines have to have access to a shared file system of some form. So it gets a little hairy.
We at RightScale have solutions as well around that. So again, this is all about best practices and what works for your organization, right? Some of our customers use SVN, for example, and they branch and use Git, and they sort of create URLs or locations for their applications hosted on repositories. And so with some scripts that you can run across an entire deployment across all your app servers, you could update code that way. There are other things that some of our customers prefer to do, which is they stand up parallel environments with their newest code. Say, for example, if it's a six-month release cycle, you're going to be very hesitant of upgrading on the fly or a live upgrade, right? So you may set up something on the side, test it, validate it, run your regression, make sure everything's well set up, and then automate the transition of traffic over to your new environment, whether that's DNS-based, whether that's assigning a new IP.
It's kind of a gold image-based model.
So it really depends on how you build out your infrastructure, but there's certainly solutions on cloud that will work for you.
All right,
we'll jump off here.
Oh,
and then,
please.
We'll be around here if you need to chat
sure.
more.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.